Welcome to the You on the Camino de Santiago podcast, Season 4. This podcast is for and about people getting ready for their first ever pilgrimage on the Camino de Santiago in Spain, France, and Portugal. With your host, Camino guide, and longtime pilgrim, Nancy Reynolds of the Camino Experience. In episode 7 of this season of the podcast, I shared a conversation I had with Judith, who had walked the Frances route from Sarria to Santiago last fall. She shared that she had had the perfect Camino. Perfect. That got me thinking, what would make a Camino experience perfect? Hi, this is Nancy, back again with another pilgrim conversation, this time with Melissa, who will be walking the Camino Frances in May. And this time, we talk about our ideas of the perfect Camino. I love the conversation because we get it all out on the table. We get honest about our Camino fantasy, especially when it comes to weather. And we have a good laugh about how unrealistic our expectations can be. So to cue up this conversation, I'm going to invite you to think about what would make your pilgrimage on the Camino de Santiago perfect. But wait, I'm going to give you a revised definition of the word perfect. And I'm going to invite you to answer this question from a specific point on the map. Typically, when we use the word perfect, we mean free from any flaw or defect or faultless. That's a dictionary definition, by the way. We're thinking nothing wrong, nothing bad, nothing unwanted, as in it went perfectly. Let me ask you this. Has anything you've ever done that was worth doing, that made a big difference in your life, been flawless? Have you ever taken on anything significant and not had something go sideways, not even a little? Have you ever had a month pass without making at least one mistake or misstep? How about a week or a day? Now, imagine a pilgrimage on the Camino going flawlessly. Perfect weather, no blisters or tendonitis or other injuries or illnesses, nobody snores in your dorm rooms, all travel connections made without incidents or delay, every meal tasty, nutritious, and shared with your favorite people, no items lost or stolen, and coming in under budget. I'm a big believer in setting intentions, envisioning the best possible outcome, and I do that for every Camino trip. And I think that's an essential part of having a perfect Camino experience, but we will need to use a different definition of perfect, won't we? Here are the definitions I use. The first one, having all the required or desired elements, qualities, or characteristics. And the next one, highly suitable for someone or something. Exactly right. In other words, perfect for you. Here's my tip then. Take some time to envision or imagine the essential elements or qualities you want in your Camino experience. And here's the important part. Focus on the things you have a say in. We don't get to choose our weather, and we can't force our flights to leave and arrive on time. But we can pick a theme for the journey, like kindness, tolerance, flexibility, openness, fun, or spiritual exploration, and then discover and create opportunities for those elements along the way. We can choose where we sleep, whether that's in the shared dorm rooms or private rooms, and honor our needs for camaraderie or privacy. We can plan to eat every meal in bars and restaurants, or we can prepare our meals in the albergue kitchens to stay within a smaller budget. We can step out of our comfort zones and talk to strangers, which will quickly turn some of them into friends. We can walk alone for solitude, or with others for conversation. We can share our stories, our heartbreaks, our victories, and allow others to know us. And we can turn within to know God more deeply. We can explore the culture and history of our host country and get to know the people who serve the pilgrims. We can take small steps to be good guests in the albergues, hotels, guest houses, and bars. We can observe the local people and learn and follow the cultural norms for a deeper level of connection. What would a Camino experience that suits you perfectly include? Now, here's the part about answering the question from a specific point on the map. Imagine you are in Santiago de Compostela, or wherever you plan to finish your pilgrimage. From that location, looking back over your journey, what do you want to be able to say about your pilgrimage? I'll share some things I've said over the years. I've said, I'm proud of what I've accomplished. It felt so good to push myself. I now know how to honor my limits and needs. I've also said, I'm ready for something bigger. And I've said things like, I love that I got to stay at Ellie's place in Trabadello and at Albergue Verde in Hospital de Órbigo. I've also said things like, I wish I'd connected with more people. I wonder what happened to that pilgrim I met in Pamplona. I really shouldn't have skipped that stage into Burgos. I need to go back and walk every step. Oh, I wish I hadn't stayed at that albergue with the 18 beds crammed into one room. Oh, I probably should have paid the extra money to have that shared dinner at that one albergue. The goal here, I think, is to identify some specifics of what kind of experience you're after, determine which ones you have a say in, and then seek out the circumstances, situations, and interior reflections that bring those experiences to you. And I will say, a big part of having the Camino experience I'm longing for is to step back, take my hands off the situation, and allow it to come to me, to find me. And then I try to receive everything with gratitude and an open mind and heart. Because really, there's no telling what's in store for you on the Camino. Okay, enough of that. Let's meet Melissa. When Melissa first reached out to me about being a guest on the podcast, I was immediately taken with how she described her goal for walking the Camino. I'll let you hear it from her. Melissa, hi. Thank you so much for being with me today.
Hi, Nancy. I'm really excited. This is great.
Oh, good. Well, when you reached out to me to express your interest in being a guest on the podcast, there were a couple of things that stood out that I just want to dig into and ask you about and have you sort of shed some light on a new perspective that I don't think anyone has expressed yet on the podcast. So we're going to get to that. But first, Let's do what I always like to do, and that is put the pin in the map. So if you will share with us what route you're going to be walking, when you're going, and how long you expect to be out there.
Okay. I am doing Camino Frances from St. John, and I'm going probably toward the end of April this year. So countdown, 2 months. And I'm thinking 5 weeks.
Now, but wait a minute. You said you're probably going the end of April. Why the probably?
I'm very odd about pinning down that flight. I'll wake up in the middle of the night and think, wait a minute, did I book? When I've done it, when I have booked a trip, because I do that. I did this a few years ago when I went back to Australia, and it was really just with the pressure of the friends I was going to visit. Like, we need to know when you're coming.
Right. Well, no one is waiting for you to show up on the Camino. So what do you think it is? What's this? I mean, it's coming up quickly.
I think there's a little part in my brain that wants it just right. And the bigger part of my brain knows that's not possible.
Oh, I love that.
I want nice weather.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't want it to be cold. I talked with some friends who said, oh, we started off from Saint John and the wind was knocking people over. And I thought, oh, I've thought of cold. I've thought of snow. I've thought of rain. I never thought of wind.
Uh-huh.
So there goes my perfect plan.
Oh, but I love that. So I so appreciate your candor in saying that. We have a picture in our minds, don't we, of what the Camino experience is supposed to be.
Yeah.
And for you, it's fair weather. I'm a fair weather pilgrim. Blue sky, puffy white clouds, 70 degrees Fahrenheit, about 20 degrees Celsius. I'll go. I'll walk.
Mm-hmm. And I'd love some wildflowers.
Oh, sure.
Spring flowers, little lambs, you know.
Now, where do all these ideas come from? I'm just curious.
That I want it to be that way. Oh, that's so funny. Because my first thought was trips I've been on where I didn't think that, oh my God, I never thought about it was going to be cold. I went to Mexico. I should have brought a puffer jacket. Mm. It's freezing. There's no place to shop, you know, whatever. Or last year I was in Barcelona and it had been so hot earlier. Everybody talked about the heat. At the last minute, I pulled my jacket out of my bag and I ended up having to buy, I still have it. It's very cute. I went to a little vintage shop and got a fuchsia colored little Italian cardigan.
Perfect. What a great souvenir from traveling to Spain.
I wore it every evening, even when it was nice, warm weather in the evening, things get cold. They can get cold. So I've been accused, but I don't think it's much of a criticism. I've been accused of being a maximizer.
Oh, what does that mean?
I guess I would say I like to do things with gusto.
Mm.
And I think maybe that links back to I want it all just right.
Yeah, yeah.
That is what I like about where I am right now in my life, because it's like, all right. I can picture myself saying, huh, this pouring rain for 2 days, I guess this is my Camino.
Well, see, this is such a great conversation because we do have an image in our minds of what the perfect Camino experience would be like.
Yeah.
And it's things that we've seen in movie. I don't know that in the movie, the way it ever rained, I'm not sure if it did. Certainly nobody got blisters. Yeah. And so when we think about this ideal version of walking the Camino, it's very romanticized.
Yeah.
And the reality is, what'd you say, 5 weeks?
Yeah, I think so.
Pick anywhere, any time of year, and see if you can get 5 weeks of perfect weather in a row.
Right.
Not too hot, not too cold. No rain, please. Or if it is rain, I'd like it to rain at night, but not turn the trail into mud, because that would be terribly difficult to walk on. So we don't want that.
Yeah.
And let's leave out the wind, because that sounds less fun. Well, you know what? The wind at night would be okay, because that's kind of fun to feel hunkered down. Yeah. It's these great ideas we have. But the reality is, this is a walk outside.
Yeah.
And it's going to take time. And by the way, the Camino Francés goes through a number of different microclimates. Up three mountain passes, 180 kilometers on a high plain. I wish you great luck in having perfect weather.
Thank you, Nancy. I think you have certain, you might have a connection or two.
I do. Actually, you know what? It's funny that you say that because on my first Camino, I wrote a little song called Blue Sky, Puffy White Clouds. And I would sing it as I walked. And I had blue skies with puffy white clouds. And there was this one day I was in Palos de Rey, I'm not quite sure the right saying of that. And there was another pilgrim who was really super grumbly about the weather and all of that and cranky. And I'm like, oh, wow, that's interesting. I haven't been walking in the rain. He's like, he glared at me. And, you know, I sang the song and it worked. Truth is, it's a prayer. It's a prayer for blue sky with puffy white clouds. Yeah. And then we get what we get.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I understand I'm a fair weather pilgrim and I want it perfect.
Yeah. And I think I have enough of imagination that I could imagine the blue sky with puffy white clouds on those days that, you know, it would be a bit of a bummer if there were hardly any blue sky.
Right, right. Yeah.
And by the way I kept noticing that they weren't filming that in a consistent season, you know, like one time the hay is down, the next time it's all, you know, I know they're covering ground, but it's like, wait a minute.
Right. It was Hollywood. One of my favorite moments going over the Pyrenees was when an American woman, I actually heard her say, "This is nothing like the movie."
Oh, okay.
It may be. You will probably have wonderful community meals, and you'll walk through the same beautiful countryside and landscapes.
Yeah.
But your experience, and I think it's actually probably what you're after, is your experience.
Yeah. And so this just put another thought in my head. I'm going solo.
Okay.
I kind of thought originally that two other people I know who are much younger than I am, who were planning to go around the same time, they're not related, but we were all, and I thought, wow, that'd be really cool. You know, we don't have to walk every day, or we don't even have to walk the same pace, but you just know. And then this has become much more important for me to do this by myself and have my own experience. And I feel like in the past, sometimes when I've traveled alone, you see all the couples or the families or, you know, lovers. And it's like, oh, everybody has someone to share this with. And you're not seeing them when they're having the tiff.
That's right.
Or the kids are, you know, just threw up, or, you know,
some version of meltdown.
Yeah. And I'm kind of jumping here, but the other thing I really love is when you are by yourself, the opportunities for who you meet are different than when you're with another or a few others.
There are different dynamics for sure.
And I sometimes refer to this as 5-minute best friends.
Oh, I like that.
Where you're traveling and it's on the plane, or it's standing in line for something, and you just start, you know, you and I start talking, and it's like, oh my God, I just love you. And we'll meet again. And I forgot to get her name. I forgot where you're from.
Yeah.
But it's still an experience.
Yes. And it's a connection.
A connection.
It's so true. We can make these deep connections in the blink of an eye.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not forever. They're for right now.
Yeah.
In this present moment. And that's something that we see on the Camino all the time, is the present moment and what's possible there.
Yeah.
Now, I want to ask you about something. I want you to expand on the solo thing, because when you reached out with the interest to be on the podcast, you said in your initial request that you do not love to travel solo. Will you talk a little bit about your travel experience alone and why this has you kind of hesitating a little bit about going alone?
Okay. I've been a single mom. He's now almost 32, and I traveled with him. So then I'm responsible.
Okay.
And yes, it's an amazing experience, but all those responsibilities. And then the times that I'm not somebody who loves going out to dinner. I don't take myself to dinner necessarily by myself. It just feels like, oh, there's the Eiffel Tower, or there's the Taj Mahal. And in my head, I think, if only I had somebody to share that with. And I feel that where I am now, and the nature of the Camino, maybe that's it, Nancy, the nature of the Camino is that there will be people to share that with.
Sure.
And there will be others with that same feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think there's a little bit of difference between a vacation, a trip, traveling, and in this case, this pilgrimage.
Pilgrimage. That's our key, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's our key. And in the hallmark of pilgrimage, there are a couple things. One is there is a destination that is sacred in some way, whether it's sacred to you in the way it was originally sacred or sacred to you in another way. There is a significant destination. And so you have to make a journey to get there.
Yeah.
And it's that journey that differentiates it from vacation or just another trip. And then the other thing is the intention.
Mm-hmm.
And why are you walking? So I want to talk about that with you. And I'm going to read what you wrote again when you filled out the interest form. You said, and I'm going to use a version of a cuss word here, so bear with me. It was what you said. And I've actually said this before on my podcast. I just don't swear very much. And so I always am like, okay. So here's what you said. I'm doing this to reclaim my badass, adventuring, world traveling 20 to 30 year old self now with all this life experience. Would you talk about that and why you're walking the Camino and why now?
I basically traveled for 10 years. I left right after my 19th birthday, and I was living and working in Europe for 4 years with just, you know, I was a ski instructor. I taught horseback riding. It was just amazing experiences because I was 19 and 20 and 22 and 23, where somebody says, hey, we're all jumping in a van and going to, do you want to come? Sure.
Yeah. I don't even care where.
Yeah. And yes, it was very much a part of my life. And yes, I was meeting people who were working on education and establishing careers and all this stuff. It was like, oof, my parents at one point really wanted me to come home and, you know, get serious about something.
Anything will do. Something,
well,
please.
It was more that I had not gone traditionally to college.
Okay.
And this is all great. My father was in travel. We traveled as kids. Travel is, my father always said, that's the best education.
Amen.
Yes.
Yay, Dad.
And I guess, you know, then they're concerned about you. So I ended up applying to school in England, and I did 2 years of school, of nursing school, actually, in England. And that kept them, they were very excited about that.
I love that.
And then I was in Australia for 4 years. And the only reason that I came back was because my father was dying.
Oh,
and when I was 29, so I came back to be with him for his last 3 months, and then kind of to help my mom. And then it just got further and further, and the career that I was starting had some opportunities in New York. So I was taking advantage of that. And, you know, the longer you're away from one thing, the harder it felt to, you know, and I'm really going to, if I go back to Australia, that's where I'm probably going to end up living.
Mm. Okay.
So, and you asked about why now. I maybe had like an existential crisis, I would say.
I love those.
Yeah. Well, you know, as painful as it is to go through the what you reap from it.
Yes.
And my mom is launched into heaven. My son is launched into his wonderful life with his darling long-term girlfriend. And then a year and a half ago, my almost 15-year-old dog died.
Oh, wow.
And that, it was like, it almost untethered me.
Yes. Good word.
I had been responsible. I had three brothers who were in the US, who were in Connecticut, where my father was, and I was in Australia, but I was the one who came home. Then I was the one who helped my mother. And then when mm-hmm. my mom was on her final adventure, she came down here to be with me, and then raising a son and having a dog, and it's like, oh my God, what's my purpose?
Oh, big question.
Big, huge question. With, it almost felt like having an empty belly, you know? How am I going to nourish myself? All these things that I ate in the past,
uh-huh.
you know, that food isn't available to me. What, what do I do? And there is no one else who can answer that.
Oh, that is so true. I often wish there was a committee that met monthly that would figure out my life for me and give me the plan.
Yes, please.
Yeah, that'd be great. But there isn't. It's up to us and our circle of friends for input. But wow, so courageous to be jumping into that.
Well, there are choices, I guess. I could backslide and move to a gated community.
Yeah. You could do that. Yeah, you could do that.
Do something. I don't. There are other choices, let's say, but they're not choices that felt true. And when I was back in Europe and in Spain last spring for 3 weeks, I was like, wow, I need to come back. And all right. And yes, there's a big wide world and I haven't been to, you know, Bhutan or, you know, some places, but there is something about Spain that is like no other place.
It's pretty special. And it's interesting how we feel drawn to it.
Yeah.
Almost as if it's a cellular magnetic attraction, maybe because we have heritage going back in our family trees to the Spanish people. I don't know. It's very interesting.
Well, I just passed my 1 year anniversary with my Duolingo, which I do every single day.
Oh, wow. What can you say?
Oh, not here, not now.
Nothing that you'll say in public yet until you need it.
Yeah. And I'm not bad in conversation when I have to be.
Okay.
But if you said, my mind will just go blank.
Yeah. Here's the mic. Start talking.
No. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It does go blank for sure.
And I can read Spanish fairly well. I mean, you know, I'm getting there.
Now, did you start to learn Spanish because you wanted to go walk the Camino, or which came first?
Well, I put my son in Spanish immersion school when he was 5. And I thought, oh, this will be great. We'll learn together. But he was 5 and he was in that all day long. And I was, you know, doing a grown-up's life. And he went way past anything that I could do.
Okay. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of like, oof, I missed that boat. And he's fluent. It's such a beautiful language. And also here in the U.S., it's so important. I meet people, somebody's asking for directions, and I can tell that, you know, they're some Latin background and I want to help. And okay, I can't remember. Oh, left is that word that's really long and spelled weird.
Yeah.
So it's really fun. Learning a language is really fun. And it opens the door for.
That's it. That's it. Yeah. People always ask, do I have to learn Spanish before I go? Can I do this if I don't speak any Spanish? Well, of course, the answer is yes. We've been traveling for generations without knowing the language of where we're visiting. But there's something that happens when you do speak some of the language. And that is that in addition to connecting with the pilgrims from other places and pilgrims around the world, you also get to connect with the local people.
Yeah.
Which in my experience, completely improves the experience.
I agree completely. And there's an element of respect, perhaps, and caring that I want to know the words I can use.
Mm.
Google Translate was really great for those moments when I got my stuff in a pickle because I thought I was saying this and I was saying that.
Uh-huh.
And someone would burst out laughing and I'd think, what did I just say?
Said with respect. Yeah.
So I know I'm in a mix of very romantic ideas about this and realistic. Like there are going to be days where it's like, oh no, there's another 4 or 5 miles. And
yeah, it's hard. It can be hard. Not every day is a walk in the park.
I can't think of a better challenge right now, a better accomplishment, or a better adventure. Like what kind of adventures can you have right now? You can go on a cruise. You can you know, that's, this feels like the adventure that's calling me.
So let me ask, how did you first hear about the Camino? Where, how did it get on your radar as something you might do?
I saw the way years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh yeah, it was still at a time that I was, you know, had a lot of responsibilities and, oh, but I've been to Spain. I'll go someplace else. And I have been other. And then I, when I was in Spain, we had hosted two exchange students when my son was small or young. And we've stayed friends with the family. We have a really wonderful relationship. And I saw them last year. The parents who are my age don't speak English.
Oh.
So I was staying with them outside of Barcelona in Tarragona, which is super beautiful. And I hadn't realized that when the daughter that was our last guest, she and I were communicating back and forth because she speaks pretty good English. And she said, well, my parents are on a trip and they'll be coming back, blah, blah. And, you know, it'd be great if you could come on this, you know, after this date. And then bit by bit, it's like this word Camino. And they were, because they live in, you know, close to northern Spain, they're, I guess they've done it a lot, and they've done it a lot as a family. And I didn't quite realize that when I was staying with them. And then I guess while I was in Spain, the idea of how would I come back, how would I stay, I guess the question of what do I want? What do I want? And so how long? It's probably been in the air of my consciousness without, you know, grasping it for a long time.
Okay. And then what was that moment when you said, now is the time? What switched?
I think when I met the people that I was telling you about earlier, and one of them had done the Camino in his mid-20s, and we were in a group together, and the woman said, oh, that's amazing. I'm doing that next spring. And it just was like, oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I don't actually know what this is, but the answer is yes.
Yes. Yes. And I think I watched The Way again by myself. And that was like, yeah.
It's a go.
Yeah.
It's a go. Okay.
And then there's a point in life. I'm not in my 20s anymore.
You're not. You look amazing.
Oh, thank you. But it's a big year and people do big things, or, you know, you could have a big party or go on a, I don't know, what,
on a cruise or move into a retirement community. Are you willing to say what year you're coming up on?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I will be 70 in August.
That's amazing. Cause I want to tell my listeners, the face that I'm looking at, if this is 70, I can't wait. This is, I mean, yeah, that's.
Well,
age is being redefined, I think.
It completely is. And it's in your head and, of course, in your body. And with that, the reality check is, wow, I have a tweaky back that surprises me every once in a while. That could happen.
It could.
My feet get hot and cold. That can lead to moisture. That can lead to blit. Oh, that could happen. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the more things, I guess, that I let circulate as possibilities. It's okay. Well, that trip to REI is going to take a couple of hours there. And
yeah. And REI, by the way, if people listening don't know, because you're not in the United States, REI is our co-op sporting goods store, Recreational Equipment Incorporated. And it's just, we have a love affair with REI because they have a no questions asked 1 year return policy. So we can test drive our boots and shoes and backpacks, and doesn't work out, we take them back and get our money back. It's so American, isn't it?
It is. And it's not like they're throwing them away. They're selling them. They have a table with used, and other people who are at a point where they'd love a pair of Hokas, but they can't afford them.
Exactly. I'm so glad you said that. Yeah, I'm really glad you mentioned that, because they, Yeah, it's not about disposable goods or filling the landfill. It's about getting them to the right person who can use them and appreciate them and enjoys a lower price. Yeah, good point.
So the boots that I got, I had Salomons. I like them a lot. I don't like heavy hiking boots. Mm-hmm. I have Oboes that are waterproof. They're really heavy. Okay. So I'm not taking those. And it will be spring. And I bought a pair of Merrells. My feet move around too much no matter what. So I'll be going. And I think I'm going to do trail runners.
Okay.
Either Hokas or Altras, I think.
It's so personal. And what we do know is that it will rain and it won't rain. And the sun will shine and the sun won't shine.
Yeah.
We don't know what you're going to get weather-wise, if you need waterproof or what. But we do know about the Camino there, though there is a fair amount of asphalt walking mm-hmm. on roads. Mm-hmm. And so those big, heavy, is what I refer to as badass hiking boots, are actually more than you need for the job. So I think you're on the right track with the trail runners, something a mm-hmm. little bit lighter. Mm-hmm. Yeah, good.
And I want to ask you, and I do know, I love that you have these specific episodes. You did have a, you know, shoe sock kind of thing. People talk about flip-flops. I understand you could bring water shoes or flip-flops for, you know, being in an albergue or out of the shower or whatever. But a lot of people were talking about their Tevas or their Chacos, because I do wear that a lot for hiking in the summer. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, because I think it would be important. If I know that I'm not going to be ascending or descending, mm-hmm. that, you know, to get a new pair with good support might not be a bad idea. It's one more thing.
It's one more thing. And break them in. Make sure that your body is used to them. Your feet are used to them. Yeah, for sure. So if I were to do a footwear formula, it would actually have three parts to it. The first part would be what you're doing most of your walking in, regardless of weather, regardless of terrain. Most of your walking will be in a primary pair of footwear. And then there are the flip-flops that you mentioned. And I use my flip-flops for two things. One, I actually wear them in the showers, if it's a shared shower, because there are a lot of feet going in there.
Yeah.
And feet do collect germs and things. So, and I've become a little bit more fastidious since the pandemic, I have to admit.
Sure.
So, I wear flip-flops in the shower. My flip-flops also are easily accessible in my day pack, so that when I take a break on the side of the trail, kick off my boots to air out my feet, and then go, oh, I think I'd like to go put this in the trash bin across the plaza, I have flip-flops instead of barefoot. Or if I go, I think I'll run into the bar and get a coffee and use the restroom, would you keep an eye on my backpack? I'll be right back. Mm-hmm. I'm not doing that barefoot. So that's where flip-flops come in. But then it's the third pair of footwear that has all the mystique around it. What do you want to wear in the evenings when you're not on the trail? Your feet are clean, you've showered, and you're not walking a lot, but you may also want to walk around the town or village or city even, and you want to go get something to eat and you don't want to wear flip-flops into a restaurant.
Right.
What's that third pair of footwear? Now, it is all over the board. Exactly like the walking shoes are. Some people will wear trainers for their walking shoes, or what we would call tennis shoes. The Hokas are very popular. Hiking boots, trail runners. Just like with the primary shoes, that third pair of shoes is all over the map. So my personal preference is I wear a pair of Crocs. Now, when Crocs first came out, they had holes in them on the top.
Yeah,
I actually have a pair that don't have holes.
Oh.
And so they look like almost like plastic house slippers. They're super lightweight, super comfortable. I can wear them with socks or without, and I can walk around town and look like I'm wearing a pair of shoes. Some people will do what you talked about, wear a hiking sandal or other Chaco Teva. So some people will wear that. It's like the other ones. It's so personal. So the question is, what you're aiming for is something that you can wear out in the evenings and something that is relatively lightweight. And then I think the bonus is if you can also wear it on the trail, keeping in mind that if you wear that third pair on the trail, you have to carry your heavier first pair.
Yep.
So there's a lot of trade-off. And the answer I give is the same I give for every question. It depends.
Yeah. Yeah. And doing the whole thing, I will pass through cities. And yeah. I know that there, you know, there are places. Oops, my flip-flops popped. Or
yeah.
But flip-flops and cobblestone don't.
Oh, that well. Doesn't sound like it would work, does it? Yeah, it's not as fun as it sounds. Yeah, so I'll tell you about a type of store that you have in Spain that we don't have so much in the United States. They're like variety stores, and they are often referred to as Asia Bazaar or, gosh, what else are they called? Just a bazaar, and sometimes even Chino Bazaar.
I've heard that.
Yeah, and so my theory is that many of the goods are from China and that would be made in China. That's why they would call it that. But also, most of the staff are of Asian descent. So they have moved to Spain and this is their livelihood. And they do a wonderful job of providing low-cost items, one of which are flip-flops. And I always get my flip-flops at the Asia Bazaar store, usually in Pamplona.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, and you can get S-hooks there. Do you know about the S-hook?
I have this list of clothespins and S-hooks. And
yeah, so they sell S-hooks. They sell plastic containers with lids if you want to have something to carry out food in, Ziploc bags, everything. It's like a teeny tiny version of our Target store.
Okay.
Yeah.
I love that because it's also the kind of thing that I don't want to pack everything because I'm most likely not going to check a bag.
Okay.
It seems too, throwing things too much to the gods to check a bag and then have it not show up.
Well, here's the thing about that. I'm going to interject.
Okay.
If anyone listening needs to check a bag, check a bag. I mean, statistically, the odds are in your favor that it will arrive, but do not check the backpack you're going to carry on the trail. That goes carry on no matter what. Yeah. If your backpack goes missing, you will be delayed in your start. If an extra bag with your trekking poles and your Swiss Army knife go missing, you can buy those. But your Camino backpack, hopefully you've trained with and it loves your body and you love it. So yeah, that's always a carry-on item.
So in St. John or Pamplona, I can get little scissors. I can get hiking poles, right? Because I'm not going to bring my poles from here, I think.
There are two shops in Saint-Jean-Pied-du-Port that sell trekking poles. One is almost directly across the cobblestone street in the center. It's a pedestrian-only cobblestone street where the pilgrim's office is located. So as you're going up that street, the pilgrim's office is on the left. And before you get there on the right is this pilgrim boutique shop. Their inventory is curated for pilgrims. I mean, there's nothing in there that a pilgrim wouldn't use at some point on the trail, and they cater exclusively to pilgrims. There is also another shop called Maya Sport, which you'll probably walk by because it's about 10 minutes from the center, and it is next to the Carrefour supermarket, which is a very common stop to buy provisions for the first day on the trail.
Okay.
That is a proper sporting goods store where the locals go to shop, and they have all kinds of sporting goods, equipment. They sell trekking poles as well. The reason that most people go to the Pilgrim Boutique in the center, two things. One is they have longer opening hours and they don't close in the middle of the day like other shops do. So they're open, especially during season, something like 7 a.m. till 7 p.m.
Wow.
And they don't close. So you can get there and get your stuff. The other thing is they have a wide variety of price points. So you can actually get a set of two trekking poles for around 22, 25 euros. They have no bonus features. There's nothing fancy, but if you just need a trekking pole or two, you can get them there. They also have the more expensive ones if you want to get features like cork handles or shock resistant, which in my opinion is money better spent elsewhere on the shock absorbers. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they have a wide variety of gear and clothing and gadgets and Camino themed buffs and Swiss Army knives, all kinds of stuff. Yeah. So it's a great place. So yeah, the answer is, that's a long answer. Yes, you can get what you need there. Now I want to go back to your scissors. I carry a pair of scissors with a rounded tip. They're like cosmetic, so you don't, you know, poke your eye out when you're trimming something on your face. And I use those for my scissors for everything because they do cut paper and they cut string, they cut duct tape. But the rounded tip scissors can go in your carry-on.
What a great...
I know. Unless you're going to Nepal. When I went to Kathmandu, they were confiscated, but I've been all over the world and they have never been confiscated except in Kathmandu. So those rounded ones, tuck them right into your purse or your fanny pack or whatever you're using. Yeah. And then Pamplona is a proper big Spanish city. They have absolutely everything. And most everything is available right in the historic city center. So you'll have no problem finding anything. What I do caution people on is if you are particular and if you need a certain something, I would get it at home.
Yeah.
As an example, if you have difficulty fitting clothes or are hard to shop for, or you happen to have very, very long legs, I would get those clothes before I go to Spain.
Mm-hmm.
You can get something in a pinch if you need something. You won't walk around naked, but they might not have something that fits you to your sensibilities. And I'm speaking to myself because I'm a fussy dresser. The other thing is, if you want the scissors that are exactly that rounded tip, I'd get those at home.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a first world country. People say this all the time. It's very civilized. You can get everything you need. But if you're particular about it, I would bring it from home.
Well, sometimes when the thing you're looking for, you can't get, you know?
Sometimes. Yeah. Or true story though. I have a 10 times magnifying mirror for, you know, up close stuff. And I left it in Zubiri and I had to go try to find one of those in Pamplona. And I was like, oh, this is a hunt, but I found it. You know, I finally found it. Wasn't as good. It wasn't as, I didn't like it as much, but yeah. Anyway.
Okay.
All right. So we've dipped into the question of packing and gear and what to take along with you. Why don't we go ahead and jump ahead to any questions that you might have that I can answer for you? Any additional questions that I can answer for you?
My desire is to fly into Madrid.
Okay.
And I've looked and gotten info, and I think you have advice, other people. Then you can take the train mm-hmm. To Pamplona, and then there's a bus to Saint-Jean.
Yes.
I think the taxi, someone said they take a taxi, but it can be quite expensive if you don't get others with you, like 150 Correct. Or something.
120 to 140 is what I would expect for a taxi. Yeah.
Yeah. And on a trip like that, this where, you know, I want a big experience, that seems like a lot to sit in a car.
Keep in mind that from Pamplona to Saint-Jean, it is almost a 2-hour drive.
Mm-hmm.
So it is actually covering quite a bit of distance. The walking kilometers is 66 kilometers. I'm not sure offhand what the road kilometers are. So it's actually, if you think about what you're getting for your money, it's decent value. But I do understand not wanting to spend that when you could spend 22 euros to take the bus. Yeah. Or divide it by a bunch of pilgrims.
Yes. On one of your episodes, you cautioned about a bus where I can't remember, but I thought it was Pamplona that like you can really get car sick.
Yes. Motion sickness. Absolutely. That's the one. Yeah. So the road from Pamplona to Saint-Jean-Pied-du-Port, there are a couple sections. There's the first part that's in Spain, and that's got some pretty windy parts to it. And then once you leave Roncesvalles and head over the hill to Valcarlos, that road is more windy and curvy and crazy. So there are a couple of things I would say. One is say your prayers and hope that you get the bus driver that does not think he should have been a race car driver, because that really makes a difference. The other thing is to try to sit towards the front.
Yeah. Okay.
You cannot reserve an exact seat on that bus. You can only reserve an open ticket on that bus.
Okay.
So you got to move fast to get to the front of the bus.
Is there another way from Madrid that is simpler?
It depends on how you define simpler. So this way is two steps. From Madrid to Pamplona, you'll either fly, take a bus, or take a train. You pick one. From Pamplona to Saint Jean, that's the most direct route.
Okay.
Taking that road, even though it's crazy, and that would be a bus or a taxi. So that's the simplest way. Like any place else, there are a dozen different ways you could get there. You could fly into Paris and take the train down to the south, or fly to the south and then get a bus or shuttle from there, or a train from there, and then fly home from Madrid. It's called an open jaw or multi-city ticket.
Okay.
So there are plenty of ways to get anywhere, right? You could fly into Madrid, take the train to Pamplona, take a bus to San Sebastian, and another four connections to get where you're going. It's just the Madrid, Pamplona, Saint Jean is the most direct and simplest, aside from that factor. The other thing about motion sickness on these buses is the roundabouts. They have some intersections like we have in the US, but most of their intersections are roundabouts. And when you're on a bus and the bus is jamming up hot onto that roundabout, the bus goes whoo to the side and then whoo back to the other side. And for me, I'm so prone to motion sickness, just watching, even in the front seat, just watching the road tilt and swirl, I'm done. I'm a mess. Yeah. So it is tricky.
Well, it goes to my thought of the plane, if I do Madrid, arrives at 8 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
I could get a train at 10:30 or 11, which wouldn't stress me to get all that organized.
Yeah.
And then I think it's under 3, or just touching 3 to Pamplona.
Yeah. The 10:30 train from Madrid gets in, I think, around 1:30 or 2 in the afternoon.
Right. Yeah. And so I think at that hour, there is no longer a bus.
Correct. There's one bus at noon.
Okay. It was suggested just plan to stay in Pamplona and catch up on some, you know, get your sleep, have a bath.
Yeah.
And then take the bus, the 12 o'clock bus. But that would mean then staying in Saint Jean. So it's, you know, I think we're kind of excited about getting going. At the same time, I want to be fresh.
Yeah, absolutely. It really comes down to what type of experience do you want at the beginning? How much do you want to get going? I say this often. I think of it like a first kiss. I want to savor it. I want to be aware and present and in the moment and paying attention to every little detail and walking when it's time to walk. But that kiss, it's coming. Don't worry. It's coming. You only get one. You'll never again have a first Camino. And so do it your way.
Okay.
That's the thing. Do it your way.
I did like that. And I feel completely capable of doing the Pyrenees ascent and descent in one day.
Okay.
I also think if I'm planning to walk for 5 weeks, that might be a lot to start with. I know that Orasan and Borda there's no room at the inn. And I've looked at some cute places in St. John.
Okay.
So I thought I would go up where there's a transit bus. Is that what it is referred to as?
Let's make sure we have the clear information on that, because when people say there's a bus that you can take or a transit bus, whatever word you use, we get this image of what we see at home. Like the bus comes along every 30 minutes and then it goes back down the mountain every 30 minutes. No, it's not like that. The walk over the Pyrenees is on a one lane paved country road. And the traffic on there are local farmers and people who live locally, and sheep. You'll get your sheep.
Good.
And sometimes horses cross the road, and lots of pilgrims, and the mountain shuttle, which is more like an 8 to 10 passenger van that goes up for the sole purpose of picking up and dropping off pilgrims. And they have scheduled times. And usually it's only once in the morning and once in the afternoon.
Okay.
There are two companies that do that. One is the tried and true Express Burrico, which has been doing this for years. there's now another company that has expanded their service. Previously, if I understood it correctly, they were doing transportation from the Biarritz airport to Saint-Jean. Now they are also doing luggage transport, and they are doing the mountain shuttle as well. That's my understanding. I'll put the websites in the show notes. And so you want to make sure that you do two things. One, check the schedule, make sure the schedule works for you, and two, book those in advance.
Okay.
The fares are usually based on how many people are in the van on the day that you're going. So again, if it's just you, it's going to cost you quite a bit more. If you're dividing it up between other people, it comes out to about €1 per kilometer.
Okay. On the walk up, I think people have said, well, if you can't get into Orasan, that's a beautiful place to stop for and have lunch.
Great location. Incredible terrace. They don't serve lunch on Mondays. So if you're on a Monday, you'll want to bring your lunch.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And then possibly I could leave my backpack in Saint-Jean if I'm staying at the same place. But I don't know if you stayed in Albergue, if you can leave it over, if you can leave it and come
back. I believe you can, but you would want to ask your proprietor.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, when you said no lunch on Mondays, somewhere in my investigating, I heard that May 1st is a holiday.
I've heard that too. Let me look it up real quick.
Okay.
Because the concern is things are closed, right?
The concern is I would like to be someplace where I don't have to worry about that, or that it's not a surprise. The bad surprises I'm not excited about.
Again, we are going to control our experience. I don't think it's a holiday in France, but let me look it up here.
Well, I don't want to arrive on a Monday or a weekend.
It's a bank holiday, national holiday. It's their Labor Day is what it looks like. Yeah. So May 1st, government businesses will be closed. Some of the larger stores will be closed. What you can expect in general is that the businesses that serve the pilgrims will be open on holidays. So especially Orsan and Bordeaux, they will be serving their nightly meal no matter what. They will have breakfast for you no matter what. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they'll be open. Same in Roncesvalles. There are three kitchens, three restaurants in Roncesvalles. They will all be open regardless of the day.
Great to know.
The thing is, too, that the Spanish people on some of these holidays go out as well. And so the restaurants and bars will be open to serve them.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, that's a generalization. There are exceptions to every rule. And one of my top tips is don't believe everything you hear or read, because it might be different when you're on the ground.
Yeah, of course. Well, I think that was the thing that is probably, you know, the 1 foot forward, two steps back, is trying to not in the same vein as making things perfect, but starting off smoothly. And starting, I think, for me to feel really good would be to have booked through Roncesvalles. And then I would feel better about what's ahead of me. How far am I going and where am I walking? And I also have this feeling that unless you absolutely must get into the municipal albergue or, because that's all you can deal with or financially or whatever. My feeling is that most places I will be able to find a bed.
Yeah. And the thing about that is you won't know until you get there. Because what happens in May, especially, there are statistics. They do keep track of how many pilgrims come through Saint-Jean-Pied-du-Port. And there can be 300 to 400 to 500 pilgrims a day walking over the Pyrenees. And if that's how many people arrive in Roncesvalles, you'll have to move on. You will have to keep walking. Mm-hmm. So those people don't just drop off after Roncesvalles. They keep going, which is why Zubiri is such a bottleneck at times.
Where is that?
Zubiri. It starts with a Z, pronounced Zubiri.
Mm-hmm.
And it is about 20 kilometers past Roncesvalles and 20 kilometers before Pamplona, approximately.
Okay.
So that's sort of people's stage, either stage 2 or 3. And it also is at the end of the stage in the John Brierley book. And so people who are trying to avoid the biggest crowds will not stay there. They'll either go a little bit further or they'll stop sooner to get places that might not be so busy. Zubiri in the busy season will completely sell out by 1 o'clock in the afternoon, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And so I always book Zubiri when I'm coming through.
Rather than staying a little before or a little after?
For me, it would be day three because I do break the first walk over the Pyrenees into 2 days. I always book every night up until Pamplona.
Okay.
Whatever my first nights are.
So you would come, could take the transit bus back the next morning.
Yeah.
And then do your ascent into Roncesvalles and walk to Roncesvalles and stay there.
Yeah. So what I would do is if you can't stay at Orson or Borda, your first day you would walk, I would probably walk farther than Orson my first day. That's 8 kilometers.
Mm-hmm.
Another 3.5 to 4 kilometers is the Statue of the Virgin Mary.
Mm-hmm.
Another 3 to 4 kilometers is the food truck and the Cross of Thibaut.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a little van. The man, Michel, and his son, Sebastian, they sell boiled eggs, bottles of water, cheese from their farm. Oh my gosh, get the cheese. Sometimes bananas, another fruit, coffee sometimes. Yeah, so it's a busy place. So that's another 4 kilometers. So what are we? We're almost 16 kilometers away from Saint-Jean at this point. That's where the trail leaves the paved road and goes off into the track.
Uh-huh.
So that's the last point that you can either get dropped off or get picked up.
Okay.
Okay.
That's near the food truck.
That's near the food truck, yeah.
But I would have to book that ahead of time. And do I say I need to get the transit from near the food truck?
Yeah, or the Cross of Thibaut. On their website, they'll have listed what their stops are.
Okay.
Yeah. And so you just walk to there and get picked up. Make sure you know what time they're picking up. And then the next day, they'll take you back to that point. But their websites will give you all the details on how that itinerary lays out. So then you get taken back to either the Statue of the Virgin Mary or the food truck and the Cross of Thibaut, and you walk from there. You've just shaved off 15 to 16 kilometers of that second day. Mm-hmm. Now you're going to get to Roncesvalles hours before everybody else.
Okay.
Hours. And so nothing will be open except the bars. You won't be able to check in. It'll be too early to check in. So you'll have to be prepared to just hang out if you get in that early.
All right.
In your case, though, Melissa, what you might do is not stop in Roncesvalles, but instead go to Bergete or Espinal because you're shortening that day.
Mm-hmm. Are you missing anything by not stopping in Roncesvalles?
Oh, it's such a great question. You know, Roncesvalles is, oh, I think Roncesvalles is a really special place. I think there's a wonderful atmosphere of you come over the mountain and you're hanging out at the bar and you're like, hey, saw you on the mountain. Oh my gosh, how'd it go? Can you believe that wind? You know, or whatever commiseration you're having, or can you believe how lucky we were to have this weather? It's unbelievable.
The puffy clouds.
The blue sky, puffy white clouds. And everybody's talking and sharing about their experiences. There is a shared meal. It'll be your first pilgrim's menu. In the two of the three restaurants have that. And so you'll just be seated at tables with other pilgrims who you may or may not know. And you'll have your meal. In the evening, there's the mass at the church. And at the end of the mass is a pilgrim's blessing. And so for some people, that's a very significant experience. My personal experience is most of the time I can't stand up any longer. So it doesn't work to go stand in the church. But I have done it and I love it. It's just beautiful.
The mass after the meal?
Yeah, it's in the evening. It's like 7 or 8 in the evening, unless it's a weekend. Yeah, you have to confirm the time when you get there.
And when is the pilgrim's meal? I would always think with the Spaniards, I would think that'd be late, but.
No, see, here's the thing about the pilgrim's meals. They're for pilgrims. The Spanish people will go eat at 9 or 10 at night after the pilgrims have all gone to bed. Yeah, but the pilgrims' menus will be at 7:30.
Okay.
And then there'll be a second seating at a couple of the restaurants. Yeah.
Okay. I love that.
And again, these are generalities. There's another restaurant in Roncesvalles that has a what we would call a menu, which is a la carte, where you can order a goat cheese salad or a mixed salad or this just this meat dish or, you know, something like that.
And one of the restaurants also is part of a hotel, at least one, I think.
Yeah. Hotel Roncesvalles has a restaurant inside. It's the most expensive. I tend to prefer their food. I'm a vegetarian, so I don't, I like to have those different options that a restaurant with an a la carte menu will have.
Okay.
Yeah. The main course in Roncesvalles is trout fish, and you get a whole trout. They put a whole trout on your plate.
Great. Get all that protein.
Yeah. Yeah. If you like trout, if you like fish, you're going to love it. If you're a vegetarian, you're going to want to eat somewhere else.
Okay. No,
they will give you eggs as an option. Vegan is a little bit more difficult on the Camino, but.
That sounds good. I feel like those first, like any anxieties are getting the idea of, you know, the chatter being, oh my God, you'll never get a place to, that'll be packed. You'll never get a place. But the idea of, but you could stay at a little guest house before or after.
Yeah, depending on where it is. There's nothing before Roncesvalles because you have that big descent. And then afterwards, Brigette and Espinal have places. But again, the timing really makes a difference. If you are in with a lot of pilgrims, there simply aren't enough places.
Mm-hmm.
And we can generalize, historically, the first week of May and the first week of September have been the absolute busiest madness times coming out of Saint-Jean-Pied-du-Port. And my theory is people read it takes about a month to walk the Camino Frances. Oh, well, I'd like to walk it in May. If it takes a month and I want to walk in May, I'm going to start on May 1st.
Uh-huh.
And if 300 people think that, it's going to be busy.
Right.
Right. And so what happened last year is the week before Easter, everything opened up. The albergues opened up. Pilgrims were welcomed back. And they came in huge numbers and it never tapered off from Easter all the way through the end of May. So April was crazy last year.
Wow.
Just crazy. So we don't know.
We don't know.
Absolutely don't know, which is why I reserve my first nights through Pamplona so that at least I can get my bearings and at least I can see how busy it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can get a sense of, do I need to book in advance? And that's true whether you're staying in the dorms or private rooms.
Okay. I got some work to do.
Yeah. Yeah. You're ready to do it though? You're ready to make some commitments now?
Yeah. Well, with what you just said, it's like, ooh, wait a minute. Maybe I should go mid-April instead of later. But
and it may or may not make a difference. That's the thing. And the weather may or may not be great. We just don't know.
We just don't know.
Yeah, but it's a pilgrimage. Pilgrimage is not a package tour. And even those go sideways. So.
Oh, yes. You asked me something. Oh, I know. Is it the Meseta?
Uh-huh.
I think that's the part I want to skip.
Okay. How come?
It seems that it's a long 3 days of no shade, a big climb up, a big climb down, and rather arid and the same.
Okay.
I think you can have any kind of experience anywhere. Yeah. But if I find that, wow, I've spent a few extra days here or there, and now this is really getting long, or I need a little break, or something like that. So that is what, and again, it's all individual, it's all personal.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, can I bust some myths about the Meseta?
Please.
All right. So the Meseta is often referred to as the stretch between Burgos and León, which is about 180 kilometers. Many people will argue, though, that the Meseta actually continues all the way to Astorga. Meseta is a high plain or a plateau. So for the sake of conversation, I'm going to refer to it as Burgos to León, 180 kilometers approximately. So most of it is rolling hills.
Okay.
Beautiful, just rolling hills. Nothing too strenuous. There are places where it is flat, pancake flat. I liken it to what we call in the US, Montana, our big sky state. Mm. It's like being under this immense, vast, bigger than you and bigger than you will ever be sky. And you're walking underneath that mm. with rolling hills, some of it flat, some of it rolling.
Uh-huh.
And some of the best hospitality on the entire way.
Oh, well, look at me, my idea.
Yeah. Now, here's the other thing. In the springtime, those rolling hills are green. And I mean, a dozen different shades of green, filled in parts with red poppies.
Oh.
It is exquisite.
Okay.
I'm going to make myself cry. It's, to me, that is one of the most beautiful parts of the Frances, to walk amongst these rolling grasses as they just cascade along the terrain.
Okay.
Now, that hill that you talked about is after the town of Castro Hedis, which kind of messes with your mind anyway. It's about 2 kilometers long, wrapped around a hill, and you're thinking, does this end or am I forever in Castro Hedis? So it's really sweet though, because it's this, you walk through all these, this small street with all these old buildings, wonderful hospitality at a couple of these albergues, just really sweet. Churches, big, stately, giant churches along the way. And then you come out the other side and you walk for a little bit. And then there's another plateau that's actually a higher plateau. But the ascent up that, it can't be more than a half a kilometer. I mean, maybe a kilometer. And then you go down the other side. And the vista from the other side, you've seen it in photos without knowing it. It just stretches out. And the trail is winding through either green or brown, depending on the time of the year. And there's a village in the distance. And it's just, yeah, it's lovely. And at times it's tedious. I mean, I remember a conversation over dinner one time. Wow, that was a long day. Yeah. Did you see the tree? Because there was only one. Yeah. You know, so it is challenging. The thing about the Meseta is it almost feels like it represents a independent section of the Camino that people either walk or they don't walk. Mm. And then it leads us to divide the Frances into 3 different distinct parts: Saint Jean to Burgos, Burgos to León, and León to Santiago. And many people will say, and I don't know the origin of this, but there's sort of a lore that goes along with this that says that Saint Jean to Burgos is the physical part of the journey. It's where you work out all your physical challenges, where you get your body strong enough for the rest of the journey,
mm-hmm.
where you figure out where everything in your pack is supposed to be so you can find it just like that. And that you've worked out when you take something out of your pack and when you put it back in, does it go at the bottom? Does it go at the top? You just solve all those physical challenges. And then you get to the Meseta, you get to Burgos, and by then that's resolved. So now all there is left is to go into your mind. And then you have 180 kilometers of relatively unchallenging terrain, and you get into this rhythm of walking, 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 and the mind starts to quiet down.
Mm.
And it's the chatter starts to diminish.
Sounds great.
And by the time you get to León, you're ready for the third part, which people call the spiritual journey of the Camino. But you can't get there unless you deal with the physical and the mental. That's the thinking on it. And it's so well known that Wise Pilgrim actually structures their app that way.
Okay.
Okay. So what I always tell people is, if for you this is a pilgrimage, and if you have time, try not to skip anything.
You got me. I'm good.
That's my sales pitch. Yeah, it's pretty special.
You got me. I'm good. Now, if you could figure out to make sure it's not too crowded and the weather's...
I'm going to call. Don't worry. I will make the phone call.
Thank you.
I skipped the Meseta the first time I walked it. And I did that because I had knee problems. I knew I couldn't do the full stages between accommodations. at the time, there weren't as many places to stay as there are now. And my limit was maybe 15 to 20 kilometers. And so I was nervous about my physical ability to walk it. So I just skipped it. And I have since walked it, the whole thing, in one go. And I have gone back a couple times to walk just the meseta. That's how impactful it's been for me. Just that. I remember one day I'm in the middle of the meseta in a town called Moratinos. And I'm standing at the edge of a field. And the wind is blowing the grasses, just these beautiful waves over the grasses. The sun is setting before me, and the moon is rising behind me. I mean, the emotion that wells up just telling you about it.
I can hear and see.
You know, just a mat. I mean, it was so sensual.
Oh,
in the regard that it came at me, every sense was engaged. It was incredible. I don't know what you'll have.
Nor do I.
Yeah, there's no way to know.
So all the things that, you know, there's Facebook pages, there's your wonderful podcast, there are so many people's input. I haven't heard anything about massages.
Oh, well, we should talk about them then.
Yes, please.
Yeah. Okay, so I'll give you a beginning and an end answer. There's a place in Pamplona, right on the Camino. It's called Ultrea, and they offer massages, and they have a website so you can book ahead. And yeah, make sure you get that booked. And especially if you speak some Spanish, that will really help you to make that phone call to get that booked. Okay. At the other end in Santiago, there's a place called Quintana Massage. I'll put these in the show notes too, by the way. Quintana is in Plaza Quintana, which is right next to the cathedral. They're quite a large company. It looks like they've got male and female massage therapists. They even offer gift cards. So if someone wants to buy you a massage for the end of your walk, they can do that.
I'll talk to my son.
Yeah, yeah. It's a great finishing gift. In between, you're going to see signs along the way. I won't say you'll see signs everywhere because that's not accurate, but you will see signs for people who offer massage in the towns and the cities.
And some of that's my favorite. I'm not, you know, I really want to be in the experience.
Yeah.
And having a massage is really good for my body.
For sure.
You had asked me, and I do think it's a really important question about, you know, what got me to this place? What do I want? You know, the really good questions.
Yeah.
And I was talking about existential crisis, period. And it did go on for a while. I was in a very intense career, very, you know, someone's calling, where are you right now? And how soon can you, blah, blah. And I think you can get used to a certain amount of, like, I'm at this stress level and it's been so long, I'm not even noticing.
Mm-hmm. You've got a baseline that's higher than most.
How noisy it is in my head, how tense my body might be, and meditation is very important.
Yeah.
And the idea of like swimming laps, the idea that there are ways to meditate and then you're coming back into life, the delicious privilege of taking myself out of this. And I know it wasn't your intention to sell me on the meseta, but that, I love the idea of.
I was going to say, don't skip the meseta based on just what you just said right now.
Mm-hmm.
Your mind will love it.
Yeah. And to have that experience, I feel like I'm in act three, as Jane Fonda says, I'm in the third act, and the third act can be the most fun.
Oh my gosh.
A play, yeah. A movie, a book, whatever. And I'm not build and have all that. And I think that the Camino will be incredibly informative and influential in my third act.
I think we can wrap this up right there.
Okay.
I can't wait to hear how it goes. Melissa, thank you so much for spending time with me today.
Nancy, it was such a pleasure, such a delight, and a lot of fun. Thank you.
My pleasure as well.